This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Beginning Thursday, or no later than next Tuesday, The Raw Deal will expand to a two-hour show that will afford many more opportunities for you to call in. Meanwhile, today, the number, if you want to call after the break, is 717-300-1698. 717-300-1698. There's a new book out. It's going to get a lot of attention. I heard an interview with the two authors just before I came down, and I found an article about it on USA Today online. There's much more out there. It's entitled Shattered, Inside Hillary Clinton's Doom Campaign. The authors, journalists Jonathan Allen and Amy Parnes, under the presumption that Hillary would crack that highest of glass ceilings by making a woman president, they spent a year and a half reporting on the Clinton campaign, interviewing sources on background. They observe in the USA Today, it wasn't until the final results came in that all of our reporting finally made sense, that foreboding signs along the way had been pointing in the right direction, even when they were at odds with the available data. Where I suspect what they mean by the available data were the polls that had been rigged to make Hillary look good. I've reported on this many, many times. We know rather thoroughly what was going on here behind the scenes. In the USA Today piece, they talk about Bernie Sanders, you know, raising early on with one of Obama's top aides. I'm not sure about this. He told her in October 2014, about 7 months before he announced his candidacy, a lot of people have told me I should run. You should only do it if your heart is in it, she replied, and you shouldn't do it as an issue candidate. I don't quite understand why not. I mean, if a candidate doesn't have issues, how are they going to succeed? And in fact, it's ironic because this book substantiates that it was because Hillary had no clear message. She did not really have a well-defined message that her campaign appears to have been unsuccessful from the beginning. Indeed, during the interview this evening on television, the authors made the observation that even her initial speech announcing her campaign had been a problem because it was not well-focused. It didn't have a clear message. Hillary was never really able to define why she ought to be the president of the United States. I think Hillary, in her own mind, simply regarded it as an entitlement, that it was her turn, she deserved to be well-qualified, all that. What they observe is, in the case of preparing the speech, there were more than 20 different parties involved, which, as they observe, is rather extraordinary, because that suggests you could have 20 different interpretations of what she ought to say. In addition, it remarks about the server issue that Hillary didn't want to admit that she had done anything wrong. Neither did her husband. Hillary, here's a quote, Hillary instead turned her fury on her consultants and campaign aides, blaming them for a failure to focus the media on her platform. In her ear the whole time, spurring her on to cast blame on others and never admit to anything, was her husband. Neither Clinton could accept the simple fact that Hillary had hamstrung her own campaign and dealt the most serious blow to her own presidential aspirations. It also discusses, and they did last night too, Hillary's incapacity to bring herself to give a concession speech in the night of the election when her defeat became apparent. Everyone recalls, and they rebroadcast it on TV, how John Podesta came out and said, you know, it's been a long time reaching this point. We need to give it a little more time. We want to make sure every vote is counted so that every vote counts. But Obama spoke with her and told her she really needed to concede. Once she made the call to Donald Trump, which occurred about 2:30 in the morning Eastern time, the president called. Hillary wasn't ready to speak with him because she recognized that, as the book notes, she had let him down. She had let herself down. She had let her party down, and she had let her country down. Mr. President, I'm sorry, she told him. I believe that key events in the whole campaign were the sabotaging of the Bernie Sanders campaign, which in my judgment was unforgivable, a gross breach of democracy, an abuse of the position of the Democratic National Committee, and its then head, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And of course, this is what would lead Seth Rich, who was the IT guy for the DNC, to take, you know, a treasure trove of DNC emails, give them to Craig Murray, the UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, friend of Julian Assange, who in turn gave them to Julian Assange, who published them. And of course, he wound up paying for his heroic effort with his life, where Julian Assange offered a $20,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of whoever was responsible. I do believe Bernie would have been a much stronger candidate. He actually stood for real issues. As an earlier analysis of the campaign advertisements reflected, Hillary's were mostly directed at personal attacks on Donald Trump and had very little to do with issues. Trump's, however, were much more of a mix of attacks on Hillary and issues. And of course, Donald was promising a lot of things that the voters wanted to hear about ending the wars in the Middle East, about trashing the TPP, about enforcing our borders, constraining migration, on some of which he has followed through, on others not. Indeed, when we turn to the ongoing issues that dominate the news, the U.S. may have sabotaged North Korea's failed missile test. I'm frankly convinced that was the case. We have, you know, satellite-mounted lasers that are perfectly capable of taking out missiles on this order. I think that the approach being played here of getting tough with North Korea, however, is grossly mistaken. This is a young leader. He's somewhat unpredictable. And nevertheless, it looks as though he has been telegraphing some signals about his openness. For Wayne Madsen, with whom I've had a number of disagreements about issues domestic, Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, Orlando, he doesn't have a clue. But his analysis about foreign affairs can be exceptional. Here is his April 17-18 analysis. Trump's neocon cabal misses the boat on North Korea. Donald Trump's neocon cabal of National Security Advisor General H.R. McMaster and his assistant Dina Powell and Fiona Hill, the latter in charge of the National Security Council's Russia desk, are poor choices to gauge subtle messages coming out of North Korea. McMaster, a student of professional Army pencil sharpener David Petraeus, fails to grasp that there are many more methods to ascertain the policies of a secretive country like North Korea. Beyond technical products such as imagery and signals intelligence, the neocon drive from drivel from such outfits as the Brookings Institute Council on Foreign Relations and the Heritage Foundation. There are ground reports from various defense attachés posted at embassies in Pyongyang and psychological analysis of the North Korean leader. And he goes on to say that during the Cold War, the CIA, State Department, other federal agencies employed Kremlinologists who would pore over photos of the Soviet leadership atop Lenin's mausoleum in Red Square during, you know, May Day parades and so forth, and that they would look for very subtle indications who was in, who was out, about attitudes and so forth. He's suggesting now that similar techniques should be applied to North Korea, because it remains the only country in the world where such analysis of photographs and videos is still pertinent, since virtually every other country, even those who remain communist, are relatively open in comparison with North Korea. However, there doesn't appear to be any interest in the agencies about this kind of interpretation. Here is what Madsen observes. The fact that Kim Jong-un ditched the signature communist tunic along with Korea Workers Party label pin at this year's parade, marking the anniversary of the birthday of the founder of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea and Kim's grandfather, Kim Il-sung, would have in years past, resulted in attention by the Kremlinologists specializing in Korea. The major change on display in Pyongyang was understandably totally unnoticed by the makeup-laden idiots masquerading as journalists on cable network news. But it also appears to have been lost on Trump's national security team, who seem to revel in wargasms stemming from Tomahawk and mother of all bomb attacks on Syria and Afghanistan, respectively. So I think he's actually onto something here. What he's suggesting is that he put off his Mo jacket, put on a Western style business suit, minus the Communist Party lapel pin, which should have picked up at a certain degree of open-mindedness or receptivity to, you know, Western overtures, that he's not completely closed-minded. It's been remarked that North Korea does not recognize Israel and has condemned its treatment of the displaced Palestinians. More importantly, that North Korea sells its advanced missile technology to Mideast nations on Israel's hit list. This is not to glorify the North Korean regime, only to expose what appears to be the sinister hand of Israel behind America's potential coming conflict with North Korea and even China. Here, the CNN has reported the North Korean envoy at the UN is warning of the possibility of nuclear war. United Nations, only at a North Korean press conference at the United Nations can you hear a diplomat say he hoped journalists had a good holiday weekend and warn a possible thermonuclear war. North Korea has consistently issued threats of war toward the United States in recent decades, but the Trump administration announced the end of strategic patience policy with Pyongyang has upped the ante in terms of warnings and bellicose rhetoric. North Korea's UN deputy representative on Monday unleashed at a hastily called UN press conference a torrent of threats, war scenarios, and rhetoric aimed at the United States. Now, you may or may not know, but it was reported today on the evening news that the flotilla that Trump said was heading to North Korea was in fact actually heading not north but south to Australia to participate in war games there. And that it's very, to me, disturbing that Donald Trump would issue a statement of sending a great force northward toward Korea when in fact it wasn't the case. Here we have a report from the New York Times, a Cuba missile crisis in slow motion taking place in North Korea. The great benefit we had during the Cuban Missile Crisis, if you want to draw the parallel, is that we had a few unusually intelligent and well-educated individuals at the helm in the form of John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and even Robert McNamara. We do not have that in this instance with North Korea. Instead, we have Mattis at defense. We have McMaster is National Security Defense, and Donald Trump, who are more akin to the Three Stooges. So if we're going to draw comparisons, none of us should feel comfortable about it. Here we have Russian state TV stating Trump is more dangerous than Kim Jong-un. Russia warns U.S. not to use force unilaterally in dispute. Kremlin disillusionment with Trump grows after Syria strike. Russian state television has no doubt who is unpredictable enough to bring the world to war in the North Korea crisis, and it's not the reclusive communist dictator Kim Jong-un. According to Dmitry Kiselyov, the Kremlin's top TV mouthpiece, the riskiest is Donald Trump, the man Russian officials and propagandists hailed just a few weeks ago as the kind of leader the world needed. In the latest sign of the Kremlin's abrupt about-face on its erstwhile American hero, Kiselyov pronounced Trump more dangerous than his North Korean counterpart. Trump is more impulsive and unpredictable than Kim Jong-un, he told interviewers on his primetime Sunday program. Well, I think he's right. I think he's right. And the fact that Donald has contradicted his most important campaign promise to end the wars in the Middle East and not to engage in more new ones is profoundly disturbing. It has shaken my confidence in him to the very core. The Saker is among the most intelligent, thoughtful, and profound analysts of political international geopolitics around. He's offered a multi-level analysis of the U.S. cruise missile attack on Syria and its consequences. Here's part of what he reported. I don't think that anybody seriously believes that Assad or anybody else in the Syrian government really ordered a chemical weapons attack on anybody. To believe that, it would require you to find the following sequence logical. First, Assad pretty much wins the war against Daesh, which of course is a now becoming common name for ISIS, which is in full retreat. Then the U.S. declares that overthrowing Assad is not a priority anymore. Up to here, all factual and true. Then Assad decides to use weapons he does not have. He decides to bomb a location with no military value, but with lots of kids and cameras. Then, when the Russians demand a full investigation, the Americans strike as fast as they can before this idea gets any support. And now the Americans are probing a possible Russian role in the so-called attack. Frankly, if you believe any of that, you should immediately stop reading, go back to watching TV. For the rest of us, there are three options. One, a classic U.S. executed false flag. Two, a Syrian strike on a location which happened to be storing some kind of gas, possibly chlorine, most definitely not sarin. This option requires you to believe in coincidences. I don't, unless... Three, the U.S. fed bad intel to the Syrians and got them to bomb a location where the U.S. knew that toxic gas was stored. Frankly, I think there's a third, because because the Russians had notified the U.S. in advance it was going to hit this target. We would have had the intel, and anyone with access to our raw intel, which includes Israel, that has access to all of our raw intel, would have been in a position to arrange for a substitution of the weapons in the depot, which appear to have been munitions and explosives, and replace them with chemical weapons, particularly coming from Turkey, where Turkey has been in collusion with the rebels and has provided them with gas before. Then you have the situation of a bomb being dropped. You have chemical weapons released. But it's not because the bomb that was dropped was a chemical bomb, but because the bomb that was dropped hit a chemical supplies in a depot that wasn't supposed to have them. He continues, what is evidence that the Syrians did not drop chemical weapons from their aircraft, that no chemical gas was ever stowed at the El Sheirat Air Base. There is no footage showing any munitions or containers which would have delivered the toxic gas. As for U.S. and other radar recordings, all they can show is that an aircraft was in the sky, its heading, altitude, and speed. There is no way to distinguish a chemical munition or a chemical attack by means of radar. Whatever option you choose, the Syrian government is obviously and self-evidently innocent of the accusation of having used chemical weapons. This is most likely a false flag attack. And just for the record, the U.S. have been considering exactly such a false flag attack in the past. You can read everything about this plan here and here and here and here. Political consequences. Trump has single-handedly destroyed any hope of a U.S. collaboration with Russia of any kind. Worse, he also destroyed any hope of being able to defeat Daesh. Why? Because if you really believe that Daesh can be defeated without Russian and Iranian support, I want to sell you bridges all over the world. It ain't happening. What is much, much worse is now we are again on a pre-war situation, just as we were with Obama and would have been with Hillary. Let me explain. The following are the measures with Russia has taken following the U.S. attack on Syria. One, denunciation at UN. Two, decision to strengthen Syrian air defenses. Three, decision to cancel memorandum with the USA. Four, decision to shut down the phone hotline with the U.S. military. Which means now the Syrians actually have the means to lock their airspace. Now the Russians in Syria will have the right to decide whether to shoot or not. Now the U.S. won't be able to call the Russians to ask them to do or not to do something. He continues, the Russians basically own the Syrian airspace already. What they want to do next is to give a similar capability to the Syrians. Not only will that allow the Syrians to defend themselves against any future U.S. or Israeli attacks, it will provide the Russians plausible deniability the day they decide to shoot down a U.S. aircraft or drone. Finally, the Russians are rushing back some of their most advanced ships toward the Syrian coast. Well done. He offers as a conclusion a couple of very crucial points. Some readers might think this is hyperbole when he talks about the situation becoming incredibly serious. I assure you that it is not. not only do I find the Trump administration not agreement capable, I find it completely detached from reality, delusional, in other words. Do you think Kim Jong-un with nukes is bad? What about Obama or Trump with nukes? Ain't they much, much scarier? Number one, two key points. The Russians are afraid of war. The Americans are not. Number two, the Russians are prepared for war. The Americans are not. The problem is that every sign of Russian caution and every Russian attempt to de-escalate the situation, be it in Ukraine with Turkey or in Syria, has always been interpreted by the West as a sign of weakness. This is what happens when there's a clash between a culture which places a premium on boasting and threatening and one which believes in diplomacy and negotiations. And of course, Bashir Assad himself has been interviewed and declared that the videos of dead children in the Syrian chemical attack appear to have been faked, which would not surprise me remotely. And now we have Robert David Steele, former CIA analyst who's become major whistleblower, weighing in on the Syrian missile attack. He really means a chemical attack. False flag attack organized by John McCain, John Brennan, H.R. McMaster, funded by Saudi Arabia and Israel. That's his take. I expect he's far closer than anyone would imagine. Just a few more remarks before we hit the break. We dropped the largest non-nuclear bomb in Afghanistan. The tunnels that we were bombing were built by the CIA. India, most interestingly, has reported 500 Pakistanis who were protecting ISIS or Daesh were killed in the treasonous U.S. bombing in Afghanistan. This bomb is a horrendous weapon. We also have reports that it was actually the use of tactical nukes coming from veterans today, whose editor-in-chief, Gordon Duff, was with the CIA for most of his career, spending 20 years at the Libyan desk alone, and he may be right. This is your host, Pat's Newbie, right back. Just a few more stories before I start taking callers. We have a couple standing by already. Pat Buchanan, who is actually quite an astute political analyst, war cries drown out America first. Why would I call China a currency manipulator when they're working with us on the North Korean problem, tweeted President Donald Trump on Easter Sunday. Earlier, after discovering great chemistry with Chinese President Xi Jinping over the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake at Mar-a-Lago, Trump had confided, I explained that a trade deal with the U.S. will be far better for them if they solve the North Korean problem. America first thus takes a back seat to big power diplomacy with Beijing. One wonders how much will Xi end up bilking us for his squeezing of Kim Jong-un. Trump once seemed to understand how America had been taken to the cleaners during and after the Cold War. While allies supported us diplomatically, they piled up huge trade surpluses at our expense and became virtual free riders off the U.S. defense effort. No nation were more successful at this than South Korea and Japan. Now Xi is playing the grain game and perhaps playing Trump. What is the North Korean problem? Beijing will solve in return for more indulgent consideration on U.S.-China trade deals, he asked. I also mentioned that there appears to have been a complete capitulation of Donald Trump to the neocon agenda, where Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, is reported to have been causing mayhem by meddling in the National Security Council, attempting to micromanage their agenda. I mentioned the Saker already. Well, if you want to encounter an absolutely dazzling article to which I may have opportunity to return on Thursday, if not today, how to bring down the elephant in the room, track it down. First, a painful but needed clarification. Basement crazies, neocons, Zionists, Israeli lobbyists, Judaics, Jews. Somewhere on this list, we bump into the proverbial elephant in the room. For me, the same bumping will happen earlier in the list, for others a little later down the list, but the list will be more or less the same for everybody. Proper etiquette, at least in the West, would want to make us run away from that topic. I won't. Why? Well, for one thing, I'm constantly accused of not discussing this elephant. Furthermore, I'm afraid that the role this elephant is playing is particularly toxic right now. So let me try to deal with this beast, but for I have to begin with some caveats. Here's the key message. The reason why I decided to tackle this issue today is that the forces who broke Trump in less than a month are also the very same forces who have forced him into a political 180, the neocons and the U.S. deep state. However, I think that these two concepts can be fused into one I would call the Zio-cons, basically Zionists plus some rabid Anglo-imperialists a la Cheney or McCain. These are the folks who control the U.S. corporate media, Hollywood, Congress, most of academia, etc. These are the folks who organize a ferocious assault on the nationalist or patriotic wing of Trump supporters and ousted Flynn and Bannon. And these are the folks who basically staged a color revolution against Trump. There is some pretty good evidence that the person in charge of this quiet coup is Jared Kushner, a rabid Zionist. Maybe, maybe not. This does not really matter. What matters now is to understand what all this means for the rest of us in the basket of deplorables. The 99% is basically the rest of the planet. I'll just give one more extract before turning to the callers, because this is very insightful. Here is offering, talking about a couple of examples, Syria and Russia. I'll give you his take on Syria. I think we can all agree that having the black flag of Daesh fly over Damascus would be a disaster for Israel, right? Wrong. You're thinking like a mentally sane person. This is not how the Israelis think at all. For them, Daesh is much preferable to Assad, not only because Assad is the cornerstone of a unitary Syria, but because Daesh in power gives the Israelis a perfect pretext to establish a security zone to protect northern Israel. And that, in plain English, means fully occupying and annexing Golan, an old Israeli dream. Even better, the Israelis know Daesh really well. They helped create it with the USA and Saudi Arabia, and they know that Daesh is a mortal threat to Hezbollah. By putting Daesh into power in Syria, the Israelis hope for a long, bloody, and never-ending war in Lebanon and Syria, while their northern neighbors would be plugged into the maelstrom of atrocities and horrors. The Israelis would get to watch it all from across their borders, while sending a few aircraft from time to time to bomb Hezbollah positions or even innocent civilians under whatever pretext. Remember how the Israelis watched in total delight how their forces bombed the population of Gaza in 2014? With Daesh in power in Damascus, they would get an even better show to take their kids to. Finally, and last but most definitely not least, the Syrian Christians would be basically completely wiped out. For those who know the hatred Judaics and Jews have always felt for Christianity, even today, it will be clear why the Israelis would want Daesh in power in Syria. Daesh is basically a tool to carve up an even bigger Zionist entity. I repeat, how to bring down the elephant in the room, the Saker. Check it out. Do a search. How to bring down the elephant in the room, the Saker. We have several callers here. First in line, Patrick. Patrick, welcome to the Raw Deal.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to talk about voting. You were talking about how Bernie Sanders was a better candidate than Hillary Clinton during the Democratic primaries.
He appears to have had at least 13 different primaries stolen from him and given to Hillary by the DNC.
Okay. My question I wanted to raise to you is, what do you think about the voting machines being rigged?
Oh yeah, I did an interview on this show on 1 December 2016. You can find it in the archives with Richard Charnin, who's a completely brilliant statistician. He's an expert on the theft of elections using electronic voting machines. He's published two books about it. He has yet another book in this area too. He explained to me that the machines were rigged for not Donald, but Hillary Clinton. They were rigged for Hillary. It simply turned out that the rural areas were going for Donald by just such massive margins that they weren't able to steal it for her. There was evidence confirming this when there was a review of the voting in Wisconsin, in Michigan, and in Pennsylvania. At the request of Jill Stein.
I was at one of those recount sessions.
Very good, Patrick.
Here in Burnett County.
Excellent. Well, I'll just squeeze in one more sentence and get and give you the chance to get a few words in edgewise. In New York, it wasn't even in Pennsylvania, it wasn't even possible because they had so many touchscreen machines which don't allow a recount. I regard them as unconstitutional on their face. In Wisconsin, everything was in harmony. In fact, Trump picked up like 150 votes net, but in Michigan, it was unbelievable. There was massive evidence of voter fraud, all for Hillary, where many of the poll stations turned out to have had their ballot boxes stuffed after the polls had closed. And in Detroit, you know, it was just simply overwhelming. As much as 2/3 of the vote could have been stacked for Hillary. So there was voting machine theft. Ironically, it didn't play out the way as intended. Please do continue, Patrick.
I don't know much about how it was intended, but I know that George Soros's organization had a large part to do with the manufacturer of the machines, the Smartmatic machines, Lord Mark Malik Brown, being the director of Smartmatic. And I traced the machines down because I was interested in the Wisconsin recount. And here in Wisconsin, we get them provided to us pre-programmed in St. Cloud, Minnesota, at a place called Command Central. And a friend of mine's a judge for voting, and she showed me the manual cover, and it's the all-seeing eye, like on the back of the $1 bill, with on the right big logo right on the front. I thought that was funny. Command Central.
That's just dreadful, and certainly highly suggestive. I mean, that's a symbol associated with the Illuminati, and you know, the bad people who exert so much control over the world. Go ahead.
I wonder if this whole Russian thing is just a distraction, even on the part of Trump. I think he's I really feel betrayed by him because of his turn on Russia and on Syria. And so I really, because he came out before the election and said, they asked him, do you think the votes are what happens if the question exactly was posed to him, but he said he would accept the result as long as he won, even if they were rigged, basically, was the gist of his comment.
Well, that's kind of a wise remark, but, you know, I mean, they were rigged.
Yeah, I know.
But they were rigged for Hillary. They weren't rigged for Trump. Remember, he was fighting a battle on three fronts against the Democratic establishment and the Clinton machine, against the national media, which were overwhelmingly opposed to Trump, principally because they're controlled by the intelligence agencies, the CIA in particular, but also by the Republican establishment, the Bush machine. They were all opposed to the Dawn Law. So it was really quite stunning that he could win a war waged on three different fronts. I like your call. It's very interesting. You have some inside information by having been there.
To Russia, or to
No. The voting.
The voting. Yeah, Democratic Party head in Burnett County. I talked to her for a while about this, and I asked her. I asked her half-heartedly. You really think that the Russians could have rigged the election? And I didn't expect her to say yes, but she did. And I thought, my God, this is ridiculous. How can anybody think this? And this was before it blew up, that this whole Russian scandal of possible hacking blew up.
And of course, Patrick, you're making an impeccable point, not least of all because the election, the voting machines, even though they were rigged, aren't connected to the internet. There's no way Russia could have affected them. Virtually all parties now agree to that point. Second of all, they're claiming the Russians were hacking both the DNC and the RNC, but there wasn't any hacking going on either place. Actually, I've already mentioned how the DNC emails got out, and Rince Priebus affirmed repeatedly to Chuck Todd on Meet the Press that the RNC had not been hacked. When he was insisting that it proved they were favoring Hillary. But in the third place, no one thought Trump was going to win. I mean, everyone was telling us he was going to lose. Everyone was saying Hillary was going to have a massive victory. everyone was reporting, you know, fabricated poll results were showing one after another that Hillary had a massive insurmountable lead. So, you know, why would Russia do it? They have some principles, I got to tell you. This guy, Putin, for all the demonization, is a much more principled man of integrity, honor, and character than those who are on our political stage at present or well into the past. I think you'd have to go probably back to JFK to find a man of equal character, in my opinion. Patrick,
I agree. One more quick thing. I wonder where all of these machines then get programs, like this Command Central. Is that the place where they program them? Have you looked into that, where they actually set them up for the elections?
Well, it's whoever's maintaining them. You know, I mean, it's real easy to rig these machines. I studied computer science for a year. I mean, you're talking about the simplest possible program, taking a number N and adding 1 to it to produce a new number N plus 1. There's nothing proprietary about it. And the fact that these companies protect their software, you know, as though it's a super secret classified, indicates on its face that something is terribly wrong, that they're rigged. In fact, when I invited Charnin to review the election where Scott Walker prevailed over Mary Burke here in Wisconsin, because I thought Mary ought to have won going away. And in fact, the very percentage by which the Wisconsin poll, the Marquette poll, was predicting Walker would win was by which, I mean, that Mary should have won by 53-47. And we went through it together and found all kinds of evidence. For example, in Milwaukee County, the biggest bastion of Democratic support, the greater the number of votes that were cast, the greater the percentage of votes that went to the Republican candidate, which is absurd. And Richard went back and found there was 5 or 6 different elections, including the recall election that had been rigged for Scott Walker. And it's a betrayal. And it means the Republicans just do anything they want. You don't get the periodic change in elections that keeps American politics honest and on an even keel. It's completely rigged here. I protested loud and again and again and again on radio, letters, TV interviews, and no one will pay attention to the fact that the vote is rigged. The fix is in right here in Wisconsin. Patrick, I want to thank you. Excellent call. I hope you'll call again.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Art,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Art, you're here. You're on the Raw Deal.
Yes, it's good to see that you've been shaken to the core, Professor. It's my opinion that Donald Trump is a Zionist, and he's a Zionist Jew puppet. He says from his own words that he'll put Israel first, that he's for Israel's agenda 100%. And I think that's what we're seeing with the attack on Syria. I'm expecting more attacks from the DHS on us. I don't think that anything has changed with Donald Trump. Whether it was Hillary or Donald Trump, Israel wins.
Well, I've seen a genealogical report that actually his family is Jewish, that Ivanka's mother, of course, his first wife, was Jewish, which makes Ivanka a Jew, not by conversion. Jared Kushner appears to me to be Mossad. That's my opinion. Just to confirm some of the switches between Donald Trump as candidate and Donald Trump as president, listen to this list. Lock her up. She's been through enough. Replace Obamacare. Obamacare can stay. China is bad for America. China is good for America. Assad should stay. Assad must go. We must respect Russia. Russia must respect us. NATO is obsolete. NATO is indispensable. No more interventions. Bomb Syria. Steve Bannon, alt-right. Jared Kushner, neocons. America first. America world police. Art, I think you're 100% correct, and I was had myself. I believed in the man, and now I believe, you know, now I'm in a state of total disillusionment. I can no longer get excited by any of his pronouncements because we've heard it all. We've heard it all, no matter what side he comes down on. I only hope he doesn't manage to blow up the world and take the rest of us along with him. I want to thank you for calling in, Art.
Yeah, you know, that's a sad thing, and it's bad. I'm just glad to see you come down to earth, sir. I can listen to your program again.
Thanks, Art. Well, you know, I was I really thought he was sincere and genuine, and I no longer hold that view. Thanks for calling, Art. George, welcome to the Raw Deal.
Yeah, thank you. You know, you always cover so much on the show, but the conversation keeps changing. But I'll tell you why Donald Trump is a lot more dangerous than Kim Jong-un, and that's because Donald Trump has the means and perhaps the motive. I mean, it's an absolute certainty that Donald Trump has nuclear weapons. It seems to be a question mark whether North Korea has them or not. So it really would behoove the government of America to be more diplomatic than it is now.
Well, mind you, I don't see how any rational person could have voted for Hillary over Trump. I mean, with her history of corruption, in my judgment, she was the most corrupt candidate ever to run for president of the United States. She was responsible for the slaughter of Libya. She was responsible for the brutal assassination of Muammar Gaddafi involving his castration and sodomization. She was responsible for transferring weapons through Benghazi to the rebels in Syria. She was pay for play. She took $15 million from Australia alone to get strong Department of State support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I could never have supported Hillary. I believe that Donald was the guy who was going to really give us an opportunity for a fresh start. Now I'm doubtful whether he's even going to be able to follow through on his declaration to drain the swamp in relation to Pizzagate. Many of you have heard me talk about Jim Rothstein, this New York City Gold Shield detective's interview I did with him about pedophile cases in New York, and where when I shared with him some of the information coming from the Anthony Weiner treasure trove, and asked if it surprised him. He explained to me not at all, in that there had been, in his experience, 70% of those involved, of the political elite in this country are engaged in pedophilia, which is truly, truly stunning. I just have to say I'm terribly, terribly disappointed. And if, in fact, they have something compromising on the Donald, which is not impossible, I've heard it from a couple of sources. I simply can't declare myself to be convinced yet. But it might explain a lot of what's going on here. George, anything you want to add quickly? Because we do have another caller.
Well, yeah, I agree with you totally on Hillary. And the thing that's interesting is a lot of people that I've met or listened to say they're, definitely disappointed with Donald, but nevertheless, no matter what the case is, we're better off with him than Hillary, because she was an absolute certainty to be a disaster on many, many fronts.
Yes, I agree. With Hillary, it was a certainty. With Trump, it was a gamble. Yeah, thanks, George. I always like your calls. We also have Mike on the line. Mike, you're welcome back to the Raw Deal.
Thank you, Professor Fetzer. Good evening, sir. One of my first comments was going to be how convenient this Middle East Syrian situation development has been able to take the pedophilia exposure totally off radar with a lot of the media. And that's too convenient right there, the timing of it all.
I like that. That's a good observation, Mike. I just got back from a conference. I just got back from a conference north of Philadelphia. It was north of Newark in New Jersey, not far from Princeton. Open Your Mind, Free Your Mind conference, and I did I was given an hour and a half, and I did at least a third of it was on Pizzagate, and I had to warn, my audience that some of the images I was going to show, about a dozen of them, were not for children. But I'm telling you, this is the real deal. I am going to put together a book about Pizzagate. We're not going to let it go by the wayside. But I agree with you, Mike, this very astute observation, that some of what were growing, looming issues have been very much diverted because of these events.
Yes, it's very convenient for them. The spotlight was getting brighter on all of those scumbags, and it's really sad now that it's all that attention's been diverted. And hopefully, it'll get back on track because that is an issue and a topic that cannot be dismissed in any way until they're all rounded up and held accountable. You know, regarding Trump, I believe he was sincere in the, through the campaign, and that he got compromised.
Yeah.
Now, what you said that you know they may have something on him with all this, that reminded me of video clips I've seen quite a while back, maybe 2-3 years ago, where it covered a lot of stuff, and Jerry Epstein was the center of it.
Yes.
And there
were
were some clips in that with Donald Trump with Epstein.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he said that he's a fun guy, a lot of fun to hang around with.
Right.
But he, you know, we both love women, but he likes them a lot younger than I do. That's a quote, or I'm real close to quoting that. And so I was really disappointed, you know, when I heard Trump say all that and hanging around with that dirtbag. But then again, over time and seeing him run, I'm okay. The guy's been, you know, he's a jet setter. He's hung around with all these people. That's a take, you know, that's granted, and he knows what they're all about, what makes them tick, and hopefully he was breaking away knowing that, you know, they're no good, and there's no future for anybody with them, and that he was actually going to break, you know, breaking away and trying to also make his life wholesome again. I was giving him the benefit of doubt, and I'm still not dismissing that. They may have compromised him in another way. You know, they may not have anything on him in that kind of fashion, and hopefully not, but just with compromising threats to his children. And the last thing...
Well, let me offer an observation. David Oates, whom Jeff Rentz frequently features on his show and who actually has his own show here on RentzRadio.com, found that Trump's reverse speech was completely congruent, meaning he appeared to be completely sincere until about 6 or 8 weeks ago. And only then did these discrepancies start to show up. And it suggests to me that that's the point at which he was being pressured to change his positions. They had to get rid of Flynn. They had to get McMaster in. McMaster, not only a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, but a never-Trumper, believe it or not. And then they had to get Bannon out of the National Security Council because he would have vetoed all these missile strikes. Let me reiterate, by the way, before we have to part, that beginning Thursday or no later than Tuesday, the show is going to go to 2 hours. I'm very glad I'll have more opportunities to feature more callers. We'll have more opportunities to discuss these issues. And I expect to have many more opportunities to talk with you again, Mike. So special thanks to those who called in, Patrick, Art, George, Mike. This is Jim Fetzer, your host, thanking you all for listening.